Blog Talk Radio.
Yes, 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 y'all. It's Wednesday night. I am so excited. But if y'all are not ready to say it loud that we got Brother Phil Valentine on again, a second time, to the Dry Bones Connection, then I don't know what to say. But I'm going to say it in the spirit of my brother, who movie come out at the end of this month. I love this mother. So let's just say it loud. Because you know what? I'm back. And I'm proud. And I'm proud, but we're gonna have to start showing that if we are truly proud. Thank you, good night, for coming out with us. I'm excited. I had to calm myself down, but I'm having a good time knowing that we got my brother Phil Valentine is going to be on with us shortly. We had a good time with everybody last week. I enjoy people who are starting to wake themselves up, doing your own research, not letting others tell you what to look up. Start doing your own study for thyself. That has to be understood. Again, I'm not going to take too long because I want to bring my brother on and give him his proper due and respect and time. But let me get some of the shout-outs out early, and I'm going to give this shout-out right now because this is coming up this Saturday, everybody, who's in the South Florida area. It's going to be a serious forum. It's going to be the South Florida Homeschool Forum. It's going to be on Saturday, July the 12th at 3 o'clock until 6 p.m. Location will be 745 Southwest 4th Street in Dania Beach, Florida. And that is going to be given by some serious sisters for Movement for Change. And Sister Gael is the contact number. I'm going to give you the number right here. That's going to be 954-554-5174. This is going to be in conjunction with our brother, Brother Kaba Hiawatha Kamine. He's going to be coming here within the next few months to be given a certification to certain peoples, particular teachers and other homeschoolers who are want to participate, and a curriculum will be given out. And this is a serious thing that we're talking about, because it's becoming obvious that what our children are learning and what we have learned has been totally, totally fabricated. And that's what we're here to do tonight. We had our brother on here before. It was mainly to greet the audience, but we had a lot of shows since then, and we had a lot of good guests come on here, and a lot of people that we can say we learned a lot from. I want to say that Brother Pickney, we'll be getting in touch with him. I hope everybody realized Detroit water has been turned off. The UN is supposedly supposed to be stepping in. Now, y'all don't remember that on our Dry Bones Connection website, and been there for y'all. If you have not seen it, go to Dry Bones Connection, www.drybonesconnection.com. We show that the UN was given a coastline of 100 miles in from all the coast. And it gives them power to set up in the so-called United States. So by the UN coming in here, claiming this humanitarian aid, is something that we should be taking a good look at. And I suggest that we do so. Maybe we can get more perspective to Reverend Pickney, because remember, he said they were trying to get the water from up in the Great Lakes area. So I think we should be taking a look at that. And, you know, in saying all that, you have soccer going on. Now, isn't it funny that we got Argentina and Germany? That's perfect duel, because Germany, all the Nazis fled to Argentina, so that's perfect. Perfect. Think about that, what I just said. All the Nazis basically escaped to Argentina, so that's a family game they're going to have on Sunday for the World Cup. But I believe Germany will win based off what Frederick of Bavaria said a long time ago when he introduced what we call the vowel system, A-E-I-O-U, and we'll be getting to that on Monday. So Monday we're going to get into the A-E-I-O-U and the quotes that that represents. But let me just say this before I bring my brother on, because we got a little bit to segue in. I told I'll bring him in about 9:20. Frederick of Bavaria was a world leader, and I'm going to be doing quotes from world leaders between 1200 C, that's common era. And this is what this man, if y'all look up Frederick of Bavaria, he is very high up. The popes was under him for a period. So understand that. It says that the world has been deceived by three men. This is a quote. I'll repeat it again. He said, the world has been deceived by three men. The first, Moses. The second, Jesus of Nazareth. And third, Muhammad. That is coming from Frederick of Bavaria, 1200 CE. Now, why would he say the world has been deceived by these three men? And tonight, I want to get into some more deeper information, more spiritual, as above, so below. But in order to do so, I'm calling on the Maya tonight, because, see, we got to get to the truth, everybody. The truth must be told. I know it might hurt people, but that's how truth works. Justice. Look what's going on to our people. We're being systematically put on the chopping block. Do you see the police are beating the hell out of our people all over the country and others? Have y'all seen that? Have y'all seen how so many people are now going into a police state? I mean, a police state. Do y'all see that some of our own politicians are not following anything that they said they were going to uphold with the Constitution? Do y'all understand? Without all that, then you can't have no harmony. Now, they're about to bring out a movie called The Purge. You can't have no harmony. You can't have no balance. And maybe this is being done through reciprocity in the order that is coming upon us. Y'all heard how many, listen people, I'm talking to you very clear, and I'm going to have Brother Valentine explain about this. Y'all heard four presidents say a new world order. starting with Senior Bush. It just went down the line. And not one of these so-called black leaders that y'all look up to, and many of our parents and friends and cousins look up to, have never came and said, what is the New World Order meaning for people? Particularly our people. Now, I ain't trying to sound like I can't be racist, because see, I have no power over nobody's economy. So I could be prejudiced, but I can't be racist. And I am a little prejudiced because I'm affected as well. And you have an economic squad that is going into all our bank accounts. Many of our jobs are now in total jeopardy or being restructured, even high-paying jobs. And we seem to not understand where this is going. And from all that, without that proper order, you can't have no righteousness. Now, this is the balance of the science of astrology, agriculture, medicine, and all of the humanities. Period. You have to have some structure. Brother Valentine used to talk about Yuhei Vavhei. Yuhei Vavhei is just the four elements of the universe. Many do not know that Yuhei Vavhei, which is Yahweh, has a female cohort. But we never taught that. So tonight we're going to start learning what has been kept secret from our people. It's time for us to really take a good look at what's going on because it's affecting. Now I'm going to go. And the reason why I picked this tonight because, and I'm going to make it quick, because there is a growing movement of people challenging each other's knowledge. They want think tanks. But, you know, when you have a think tank, everybody, it's going to be some hard, drawn-out debates with each other. And the one who actually has the most valid points should all be agreed upon as a validation of what the brothers or sisters have said. To get mad at somebody's validation of truth. And when you find out he's telling the truth or she's telling the truth and you still hold a grudge or you have being upset about it, is not part of the Maya. Cannot be, because if he's enlightening you or she is enlightening, because the goddess Maya is in the female principle, then you should see it as being a blessing to yourself that you are not no longer deceived. But since the Masonic Bible says, he hath deceiveth the whole world. What do you think that means? You are in the world, all of us, on this radio station, on the internet, who are listening, and I thank you all for downloading these shows. Please pass them on, because they are instrumental to a lot of people, believe it or not, who may not have never heard of the things that we're talking about. And for us to bring validation of people who have been doing the work. And I find myself, when I read this, everybody, I'm sure most of you might say the same thing, who not have went to the academic schools of the Greek fraternal orders that they have created for our people to go to get your 3 degrees of associates, bachelor's, and master. Well, I have my 7th grade education, and so I am qualified to talk, and that is a fact. So let us go with that. And let me just say what I feel this brother said. And this is not my words, everybody. This is not my words. This was a quote taken from Dr. Valentine's blog that I have that was out there given. And it's called the Cometaphysics blog, which you can also link up with. It says, sister, I stated and will continue to state that I challenge anyone to refute what I have presented about Islam. Now, this is not, I'm going to stop there because he's not saying this. Remember, I just read Frederick of Bavaria, the German emperor. He said, what I presented about Islam, it could do so in their own form, just as I did. I mean, I have also stated that I would only debate my peers. Now, I'm going to name the people because y'all seen them on YouTube. They're all over the place. Dr. Wesley Muhammad and Dr. Ali Muhammad are faithists. Yeah, I hope he explains that. Who will argue their belief in Islam and not the evidence that I have presented. For example, to this day, with all their ranting about my ghetto scholarship, that could be a lot of us, ghetto scholarship, neither one has yet addressed my point by point exposition where I have historically, technically, and visually shown Islam direct plagiarism and rip off of the ancient religion of Shiva. My sister, when time occurs, if I feel like diverting my precious time to give credibility to men who wish to continue to promote alien, antiquated, mind-controlling, dogmatic mind traps like the three purveyors of the theopsychotic behaviorism around the world, Judaism, Christianity, and Islam, I will. But to tell you the truth, if you do your own research on YouTube, he is quoted, as I may mention to the brother, this subject is very sensitive, one to us as the despotic Africans here in Mexico. I also mentioned in my latest lecture that literally held on to this information for a period of 7 years, like he said, 7 years, waiting for the most appropriate time to move, to appropriate time to present it to a more mature, conscious, and open-minded people. Now, I'm hoping that we are that people tonight, that he can explain this and where this is all going, because we have had these debates going on throughout New York and different areas of the city. Dr. Copper was here, and he said he even had a big debate up there with Dr. Copper, and Afro Kimbada was with them, and they had Ray Hagen and so forth. And, you know, we're starting to learn that this is how you have to have information. We have to decipher the information, everybody. If you're going to create think tanks, then you must be willing to decipher the information. And if you find out that Yahweh had a female part and you found out it to be true and no one has actually told you because they kept it out the way, then why would you be ashamed to show that this is a factual information? All the ancient gods had female or male cohorts. That's a fact. So we should not be ashamed to find new realities that will help us out of it. So what I intend to do tonight is to bring these facts out. I'm here to do what I can. I'm here to, let's just say, not create disorder, but harmony. Now, I don't have a problem with anybody's information, but we all just talk where facts matters. We had so many scholars already on here, Dr. Ngimi. We had Dr. David Hemhotep. And we're not debating that blacks were already here, because we know that the word America, American, from Daniel Webster's Dictionary of 1828, if I'm not mistaken, states that American is an indigenous copper-colored person who the Europeans took and adopted that name. That's, just go to the definition, you'll see it there. Just take a penny, put it to your skin, and if you're close to that, that's what they look like. Period. So that debate is over. We've tried to go into what got us here, because, ladies and gentlemen, we are at the crossroads of a serious thing. We have a black president, and I'd like to ask Brother Valentine about that, too, because there was a lot of talk about cloning. The gods mentioned cloning because cloning is a science. And guess what, everybody? You clone every day, or you attempt to clone. But those who succeed to clone, you have 9 months before your creation comes out. So cloning is definitely something we all are aware of. It's just that what type of cloning science is at now. And if they can take it from an animal and spice it to another one and create these mutants that they are creating in these laboratories, I just want to say one thing. The CDC, and I'm making sure, the CDC is actually saying that there is a disease called hooditis. Go online, look it up. This is the Center for Disease Control. Says they have a disease called hooditis where young black male is in post-trauma syndrome. That's like Lieutenant Dorothy said about having post-trauma syndrome that they're creating. We are telling you, and it is happening. The thing is, our job is not to just tell you and you do nothing. Our job is to tell you and connect you with this, and you have to do some action with it. That's what makes words come to life. So, I'm through talking. I'm going to bring it on. We need to be listening to tonight, because this brother should be getting many accolades for his recent appearance and hit documentation of the document that I've seen both. And I did get word of the one that was out, and it was very good. I also heard he had a new look in the in the documentary. He has a new look in the cowboy hat. So we want to ask him where that's coming from. And just in case, you know, he might be in a new frame of mind, because like I said, he said that he was waiting to give this information to a people who mine was ready. So while I'm talking, I'm going to be dialing. And there we go. And hopefully he should be answering the phone. And we would take it from there. I'm going to look for one of my brothers just in case my phone go crazy. Dr. Phil Valentine.
Yes.
Yes. Yeah, thank you, my brother. This is Brother Dry Bones, and we welcome you again to Dry Bones Connection, OE Dry Bones, and appreciate the time you took to come on here with us. But I want to say congratulate you, man, for having a very successful document out there for our people to learn from. And how was that experience to know that you did a wonderful job?
I'm not sure which one are you speaking about, the university?
The documentation of Hidden Colors 3.
Oh, Hidden Colors 3.
Right.
I can't hear you, brother. You're in a kind of a hollow space, and it's very difficult to pick up your voice.
Okay, let me know. Can you hear me better now?
Yeah, much better. What was the question again?
I said we were just giving you compliments about the documentation, Hidden Colors 3, and just give us a briefly how your experience was with it and doing it again.
Oh, it was wonderful. You know, Brother Tariq had flown me out to California to do it. And, you know, the energy was very high. I'm not sure. I haven't seen it yet. There's a lot of noise, brother, coming out into my...
Okay.
It's very disruptive.
Well, we have people who've seen it, and they said it was very good. Some people had asked me to make sure I asked you about the new look. I said, yeah, I did have a chance to see that. You're in a new space of mine. I said, maybe he has a ranch. We don't know about it. You're wearing a cowboy.
No, that's my native. Actually, it was a little bit of my Native American. My Native American groove, you know, the hat with the feathers.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
Just wanted to bring together my... my carob with my comedic.
Well, we know you into the comedic sciences, and we want to talk a little bit about some of these things that are happening and as they relate to, and you tell me what you think. Our disobedience against the Maya, you think that could be the retribution that our people have actually experienced because they have not looked back to the ancestors?
Well, there are many forces aligned and arrayed against the rise of peoples of color on this planet. There is the primary one of genetic annihilation. And two, people know that they must hold the present financial power, and as well as economic power, and military power in order to maintain that barrier against the genetic encroachment of peoples of color. So that is, to me, as Dr. Francis Kress and Dr. Neely Fuller and other elders speaking to what it is that drives global white supremacy, you have to take it from a personal issue. You have to look at this as, you know, what would it be that drives them after they've owned all of money's mother? I mean, Rothschild, who runs the banking system for the 12 families, the 13 families, he has at his command $800 trillion. Is that what else do you need? Other than the fact that you must maintain your power over something that is much more deeply entrenched in your fear as your fear in your psyche than just ruling, you know, the planet Earth or ruling people for just ruling them and owning money and so forth. There has to be a greater, more psycho-spiritual objective to the fact that everyone has been taught to hate peoples of color, the original progenitors of civilization that everybody enjoys today.
Well, let me ask you this. I read a quote earlier, which I'm going to start to do more often, what these rulers did say. I read a quote by Frederick of Bavaria in 12C. He said, and his quote, "The world has been deceived by three men, Moses, Jesus of Nazareth, and Muhammad." What's your take on that? Because these seem to be the most pervasive forces that are creating a lot of the atrocities in the name of this so-called religious or ism system that they have. What's your take on that? Because I know you did something about the three-headed dog.
Yeah. Thank you. It's been a while since I've. Okay, I'm getting a bad feedback, brother, and it's very disturbing.
Yeah, I'm trying to find out where I hear it as well. There you go. How you feeling? Can you say, just talk, because you know Blog Talk is we're coming to computers. Go right ahead.
Okay. Yeah. Yes, I can hear you. What I was saying is that when I did the Abrahamic Triad a while back, the brothers in Islam were very happy about it. Moors, everybody got into a very heavy defensive posture of Islam. I was just disappointed about the fact that, you know, there they are. They were all ready to open up their minds about Christianity and even open up their minds about what Christianity dovetailed from the so-called Hebraic or Talmudic ascendancy. But when I touched upon Islam, as I said, this is the what I call the field niggers religion. I mean, they got the house nigger for Christianity, so he learned to turn the other cheek and then, you know, gave birth to Martin Luther, who said, you know, there's peace, nonviolence. But then there was a faction that was carrying guns and saying, no, I'm not turning anybody's cheek over here. I'm going to light you up if you come at me. So they needed to actually infuse, again, through the Masonic order to make sure that the field niggers were more, you know, under control. So they really pushed Islam on the field niggers, those brothers who wouldn't take no crap from nobody. So you saw a great amount of, you know, comedic wisdom filtered through Christianity, but actually fronted with this white Jesus, this Borgia face. And then, of course, you know, Muhammad being pushed again as the last prophet to come and bring all religions together and, you know, through Islam. But most people not realizing that each one of them are branches from the Abrahamic tree, and that it all dovetails again from the East, where they stole the Indus Kush principle of Brahma, Vishnu, and Shiva, and I broke that down as well as the triad in the new Brahmanism, which actually became Christianity, Judaism, and Islam. And I did a very in-depth lecture showing that Islam is actually the stepchild of Shiva worship, and that Muhammad took all of what Shiva worship was, and you know the circumnavigation, which is the walking around the Kaaba. They do the same kind of circumnavigation around the sepulchre, and they do another circumnavigation around the Shivalinga. So all of these religions dovetailing from the East going into the West were actually the Caucasoid, the Turco-Mongols, and their ilk mixed in with the Aryans, who took on Christianity as an aspect of it, and the Turco-Mongol, Caucasoid, Khazarian, who took on Judaism, and the tribe of Ismail, who actually took on Islam. All of them were, again, priests, as was told, that dovetailed from those who did not follow the Ptolemaic lines when Ptolemy took over from Alexander after his death. So Ptolemy, the line of Ptolemy, who coerced the Coptic priests to choose and make him a god using his face as the Seraphis bull, the Seraphis face, using his face as the model for the Christ or for the Savior, because his name Ptolemy Sota meant Ptolemy the Savior, Sota meaning Savior in Greek. So all of these, the lines of the Pope came from the Ptolemaic lines, and that's who's ruling now in Catholicism and Christianity. And the Ishmaeli tribe was the ones who eased off to become those who did not want to have a face to worship, and God and any idol worshiping of God was not tolerated in that religion. So the ones who created the Abrahamic religions and the versions of them all had Abraham, which is Brahma, reversed to as their father, their founding father. So who says that these religions are not connected and are not controlled from on high by a hierarchy of priests? Because essentially the wars that are going on in the Middle East are actually being orchestrated by a priesthood, not by a government, but by a priesthood of elders who essentially are maintaining the friction and the birth rate and cropping down and killing off each other in the name of their own names for God. And, of course, all of it having been leached from our ancient astrosophic, astro-theological sciences that were anthropomorphized into these entities that everybody now worships as the prophets and the Son of God. Okay, we got dead air here. Hello?
Hello?
Yes.
Hello?
Yes, hello.
Can you hear me?
I can hear you. I can't hear anybody
okay.
else.
Yeah, that happens a lot here in the Blog Talk. Just give Brother Dry Bones a bit of time till he gets back, because it happens often. So sorry about that.
Okay.
I'm sure that there are other people that are able to listen to you, but they're muted and they can't, you know. But they can hear you.
No, they can't. Oh, okay. Can you hear Brother Dry Bones?
No, no. At this point, nobody can hear him until he announces that I'm back. They do that a lot to him here.
No, okay. Well, I'm not sure what it is that he wants me to speak on other than the aspects of the three Abrahamic religions. As I said earlier, that I did a lecture on it. It's just something that I know that I haven't been hearing too much response to. And it was very interesting. I got more response about Obama. And that situation, people seemed to pay more attention to that than to the information that I had revealed way back on the connections between Christianity and Buddhism and the Kemetic sciences versus the Islam and all of the history behind Islam having been connected to Shiva worship and all the rituals that went into Shiva worship that existed 1,000 years before Islam came in. The story is that Muhammad himself having been from a desert tribe that worshipped Alat and Allah as the names of their moon god in the different phases, and Alut and Alut. These three phases of the moon were actually the names for their moon god, being that they were a desert people. Sun god was not something they really wanted to worship. It was something very, very vicious. Some being in the desert, and the Bedouin people, you don't worship that which pretty much persecutes you in the daytime. In the nighttime,
she
when it's cool.
You didn't mute her out.
I'm sorry?
Hello?
Yes,
hello.
Yeah, I'm back in. This happens to us, Dr. Valentine, when we start bringing up, this is like the third show when we started talking about certain things. I get taken out, but they tell me I'm into the show. So I thank you for carrying on. I thank you for keeping the show going. One of the questions, because I was listening, that we were talking about the Shiva and the moon gods. We just had a blood moon, and it's supposed to be four of them. Give us your take on, because you're into the astrological world as well. What's your take on these four moons that are going to be amongst us?
Well, I'm not sure about the four moons being amongst us. I do know that our passage through what I've been teaching is that our solar system will be passing through different cosmological neighborhoods, so to speak, as our sun traverses around what I call a celestial carousel throughout around the center that the ancestors called Hunapku, which is the galactic center. And really the galactic center greater than the galactic center, because there are galaxies actually surrounding this one central sun. So there are many things that, as far as the phases of the moon and dealing with how the sun itself at certain times of the year and when the moon is at a certain angle, there is a certain spectrum of color that is given off based upon how the sun is refracted and where the sun's angle is to the earth. The moon simply reflects. So there are a lot of things that they're attributed to it.
I heard with Mars. I heard Mars when I did a little research on it and got more into that. And I know that these occultic people are into the astrology and as well as above, so below. They seem to key off those particular things, and being that Mars is considered the war god, you think this is a symbology for them to create this theater of war, which seems to be permeating all of a sudden?
Well, I've been telling privately our people, certain friends of mine, and certain other talk shows that, we should be getting ready for some kind of what do you call those? Not a terror attack, what they call it, a black op, or
black op.
Right, one of those false flags. And there's a couple of them that were said to have been going on right now or being planned for the United States, because there is going to be an economic collapse. They're trying to manage it so that it's a gradual collapse. But France, their bank went under, which was actually a kind of precursor to an imminent crash that's supposed to come. I think it's one of the biggest banks in France, I think Société Générale, that group, they just crashed. They're like the third largest investment bank. They just went under. And they're doing their best, the United States is doing their best to manage what is going to be a collapse. And I believe that there may be some kind of either earthquake anomaly or some kind of dirty bomb anomalies, another 9/11 false flag in order to cover up the crash the way they did, back in 2007, 2008. You know, they don't want to see that happen again because it's going to be really rough in America if anything, the perception of its money system were to go belly up.
And now I'm looking at this, and I know you know this, and I'm bringing this all out because I have, and we heard, we had a show the other day about them wanting to tax the internet. But it seems to be the UN is starting to take control over a lot of the sovereign territories of America based off this treaty that they gave the UN 100 miles of the coastland. Did you see by Detroit becoming being turned off of water, all systems? Because when you don't have water, everybody, and I work with water, you can't flush that toilet, you will have a problem, everybody. So listen quite well. This is not a joke. Do you see that as creating a problem for disease to permeate through Detroit? Because they use every method of a quiet war. They know that disease is the biggest killer on the planet.
Yeah, they need their excuse to go germ. They need to, you know, go have a germ-based ballistics, for want of a better term. America is up for sale right now. It's been up for sale. China's been buying it. Russia's been buying in. The Arabs have been buying in here. The Japanese have bought. Their people are just buying up America. And the parks are up for sale now. There's certain places that Obama wants to hold on to. But it's actually Obama and the government, the socialist government, the socialist mindset, that's actually allowing for the sell-off of the United States of America. They want to dismantle it piece by piece. And, you know, who cares? You know, the brothers and sisters, we've been suffering under one tyrant. Who gives that? Who damn is another tyrant comes in? So, you know, we're no threat here, except if we go ballistic and people start, the ones that we would call the patriots, these people, they start going ape. But the way I'm looking at it, yes, go ahead.
No, I was going to say, yeah, that would be something that would be unfortunate. But go ahead.
Yeah, well, I'm just saying that there would need to be a false flag, something that will make the American people rally around the illusion once again. There's a movie that just came out called America, What Would It Be Like, The World Be Like Without It. And I never thought there was a brown-skinned man with a browner nose than this man who actually put this movie together. It was some kind of Indian man who is actually trying to free whites here in America of their guilt for what they did to African peoples, to Native peoples, and to what they claim, trying to diminish what it is that we've claimed against the United States of America, that corporation that did what they did. And true, there were some pieces in there, but, you know, this big extolling of Madam C.J. Walker and that she was an independent woman, the first millionaire on the United States was a black woman, and oh, yeah, really, but what did she become a millionaire on? You know, she became a millionaire by getting black women to be more white and destroying any kind of African physiology, making their hair what it is, using the invention of that man, I forgot his name, who created the hot comb. And they did was center around the products that she created for black health care, hair care, something like that. But they didn't really get behind what that really meant, what she was doing, and this need for black acceptance. And she actually was capitalizing on blacks' needs for acceptance by white people. So she made millions for black women who wanted to, you know, perm their hair, the same way black men at that time thought that straightening their hair, you know, would give them a better look. And then, he went into, you know, how black people were actually selling slaves and had their own slave plantation and things of that nature. So, you know, he was trying to equalize it and gave, you know, information about the Irish being indentured slaves here as well, working side by side with Africans. And it was true in the beginning in Virginia that there were more whites who were actually slaves. They were actually the the poor and the ones who were disenfranchised, and their lands were stolen in England at the time.
Right.
They were taken away from them, and they were then turned into, you know, they became debt slaves, and they went to work it off in America, you know, in the tobacco farms and so forth. But again, you know, he tried to give a slant to the American history that gave it a favorable look, you know, trying to tell the Mexicans over there talking about how wonderful it was that America took Mexico from the Mexicans, or we'd be on, ruled by a cartel by now, that type of thing.
You know, and I noticed that this envision or this revision of history is being wrote. I did a show a couple months back about the Beacon Rebellion, which, like you said, in the early days, there were many whites and blacks were with them, but they rebelled and they stopped the tobacco farmers for up to 6 months of breaking shipments here. But there was always another side, and I kept telling, and when I got deeper, I noticed that they always are able to pit each other against each other. So you elevate this poor, ignorant white man, woman, who can't read or write either, and you give them the key mechanism that Dr. Neely Fuller talks about, is the white supremacy theology and the curriculum that they fed this. Now, you've been around these great minds, Dr. Neely Fuller. If you listen like I do to Neely Fuller today, I can't wait if I can get him on there. He is very serious about where we at. He almost says to flee from black people. And I mentioned that to Dr. Carver in so many ways. He didn't really answer. But I find that startling that a lot of our intellectual minds are almost like we at a state where we can't be touched. I mean, Dr. Claude Anderson said that we're a permanent underclass. I'm wondering, are we going to be able to get out with all these great minds that we have? What did you see from what they've been telling you, and you're around a lot of that intellectual
I came up at the feet of some of the great ones who are now recognized as great, Dr. Clark, Dr. Van Sertima, and Dr. Ben, Dr. Amos Wilson. These were the giants at my time. You know, Dr. Neely Fuller, you know, in his writings on white supremacy, global white supremacy, actually began to give us a blow-by-blow accounting of how white supremacy has been working. And based on his pupil, Dr. Frances Kress, and what she did with the ISIS papers, that began to give us a whole other psychological view of the European. And after Dr. John Henry Clark introduced me to Michael Bradley, when the European, as a European speaking on his own kind, it began to get black people.
The Iceman coming?
The Iceman Inheritance, yes. But he, what they did was monumental, because before that, we were pretty much reactionary from a physical and emotional state, you know, addressing it emotionally with our religious mind and we shall overcome, and our physical when we were dealing with the Panthers and, you know, ruling with our ballistics. But we weren't ever taking his set apart psychologically. And what these great minds did was to begin giving us an insight into the working psyche of the European mind and what it is that white supremacy looked like in the everyday life that we led, not just in the reactionary parts that we played when he attacked us or when we saw blatant representations of racism, but what racism was becoming more of and how sophisticated it was becoming and how much more sublime it has become, which is going to be in my book, Cosmic Codex, how sublime racism has become to the point now where there is no mention of it. There's no real addressing of it, except in these glossed over movies like The Butler and other crap that we keep getting that has nothing to do with an examination of the white psyche, only what it is that we did to react to it, which keeps us in a reactionary mode rather than us doing the analysis necessary that they know we need to have in order to undermine their tactics. They don't give us a chance to do that. They always keep us right off balance.
And that's that. Yeah, I'm going to go on that because it means a lot to what you just said, because I noticed that we don't like to strategize on what he's doing, and we do get reactionary to this day. What I used to tell people, and I still do, a lot of the problem I see that historically that many of our people have, they don't know America as a Masonic Republic.
Mm-hmm.
And so that concept of being the Masonic Republic, if you don't understand that, you pretty much in another, they're looking at you as if not even having enough sense. And I noticed that, and I said, people, you cannot have transparency in a Masonic government. They're not going to tell you what they're doing. What's your take on why, in this 2014, many of us, I can walk the street right now, and they'll laugh if I told them this has only been a Masonic Republic. What's your take on that?
Well, most of us are not aware of the fact that the world is a Masonic Republic. All of the major countries of the world who participate in the, what you just mentioned, the Tower of Babel, what you call the United Nations, all of that is Masonic. Russia is Masonic, China is Masonic, Europe, Africa is now becoming Masonic more and more. You have to remember that the United States of America were founded by Morris principles that became Masonic principles. And the very foundation of what orchestrates control psychologically and physiologically is not what those who are above us. That's what they give us. That's what they initiate their administrators in. The people who rule us rule above the Masonic order. And most people don't know what that's about. The Masonic order is one of the lower orders compared. So those are the administrators. The Illuminati are nothing more than the administrators for those who are above them in the incunabula. Most people don't know about the incunabula and above that. So there are levels and stages of initiation. And Masonic is essentially one of the lower orders. Once you get up to 33rd, which is above the freezing, which is above being dead, you get to know some of the operating manuals, but you are not inside of the rulership where these people rule from on high, so to speak. And their families, and their women and families, the Aldo Brandinis, the Orsinis, these are the people who rule, and they got more power than the Queen of England. In fact, she has to report to them. So does the Pope.
Like the merchants, when we're talking about the law merchants sort of system, the Venice, the Venetian.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You're talking merchants of Venice.
Because you mentioned that about that. When we talk about like the 33 in a degree, when we get into more of the, and I tell you they shouldn't be fair in others, when we get more into the higher as above, we find out that those are just angles that the sun takes when it lowers itself in different degrees of the fall.
But that's part of it. There are 33 sections to the spine.
Right.
And up to the 33rd is when you get into the skull. or you get into the high, into the upper room.
Right.
So, you know, that it's all based on the human body. All the angles that you're looking at are based on the human body, especially when you're dealing Masonically.
And that's where it gets. Now, would you say that, like, for instance, I noticed some of the books you wrote dealing with what I consider the cosmics. Would you say that most of the Bible is really astrologically intended, that we just don't understand it?
Well, yes, it's
as
an astrological...
As being an astrological book.
Yeah, it's astrophysiological, it's astrophilosophical. It's an astrophilosophical work. It's astrotheology. And it was meant as a form of articulating science. Let me just explain this to everyone in the family. Our ancestors looked at life differently from the European mind. The Neanderthal looks at the world from a very disassociative frame of mind. He is non-empathetic, has been. He came out of the caves, and being in a hostile environment caused his psyche to develop a non-empathetic connection to his environment because it was hostile. He became intelligent based upon his survival instincts and what he was essentially created in that, how the environment shaped him. And it not only shaped his physiology, it shaped his psychology as well. And of course, as the environment goes to shape your psychology, your genetics are actually now formed or become the template of that psychology, that developed psychology. So when you're looking at the European essentially does not look at the world the same way that the African scientist looks at the world. The African scientist, because of his melanin, because he was in an incubator rather than a refrigerator, developed a more empathetic connection to the planet and therefore could sense the planet and could understand the technology of the planet itself, not trying to create a dissociated technology in order to compel the planet or to rule over the planet, but to create technologies as well as civilizations and societies that are interfaceable with nature. The European was never like that. So everything that he looks at, everything that he scans of the world, of reality, is dissociated. It's not part of him. He sees it as something different from him. He codifies it based on the differences rather than what is similar, what his similarity and his synergy to it. So everything that we're actually looking at, the very world we are now suffused with, that we are permeated by, is based upon his ideology of it, his perception of reality. And in that, we have created all these memes that are to adjust his paradigm to our paradigm, which is so completely off-key and off-kilter, that anybody who feels comfortable operating in the insanity of a European culture is himself an insane person. Because you, to be normal in that, you have to be insane. So, to bring it around, I may have lost my trend of thought, but we don't have, we are not really connected. We don't have an interfacing with our Earth and therefore with each other. We don't have the same kind of symbiosis with one another. So the European is slowly but surely, he steals and perverts and then takes it as his own. It's like he's taken over hip-hop. He's taken over everything that those who create the nuances and the joy and the beauty, those who can eke out a one-to-one physiological and psycho-spiritual connection to Creator, those who can actually translate the feelings of the Creator into dance, into sports, into song, into anything. We can translate the Creator's direct will through us, and he knows that. So he can use us as just a kind of reference today because he has us under control. But he cannot interface directly with the Creator. He can't. That's why his technology is all about him hyperactivating his dead melanin so he can, he has this exoskeleton, and everybody's all fascinated by him getting into these suits and putting on all these gadgets so he can interface with Creator. But we already got that mechanism. It's called melanin.
Well, let me ask you about that, because, I mean, I read a book a long time ago by Brother Dale Jones called Culture Bandits. He was saying something similar that you were just saying. Let's go to another level with this. Sexuality. Basically, being that the black people were here first, would you say that we had, are the ones that were, had the sex, because that sex game had to come into play with us coming into the European world and seeing that we in these movies Hidden Colors, which they're showing that we, you know, we're civilizing them. What you think about all this? Because we had to have sex with these white women. So what's your take on all that? Because they could, no way that we could be mulattoes without us.
Yeah, well, Dr. Francis spoke of the fact that the black male had to be controlled so that he could not proliferate what would be the tactical determinant into his demise, his physiological and overall genetic demise. Once he no longer exists, he cannot exist anymore. You know, again, there were books out about how to create a white entity, how to create a recessive entity. You just simply impregnate a black woman and then make sure that she doesn't see any sunlight. You give her the minimum of foods that would basically essentially destroy any ability for her to translate her melanin. And if it does not work to that extent and it does not come out that way, then the next generation from her, you could do the same thing to that woman. And eventually after two or three generations, you come out with a European-looking African child. And, of course,
that would be just the albino. Would that just be an albino? Because
that would be the albino, exactly. Yes, an albinism. And he knows that. He knows that. And that's why he has now become so guarded of his recessive identity and why he protects it so, because he knows that he would have to give up what he is comfortable with, what 2 to 3 to 10,000 years of being being in an ice age, coming up in an ice environment, in a glacial environment. He would have to face the fact that his kind that had fought so hard, fought dinosaurs, fought gigantic cockroaches to exist, fought weather, fought nature to exist, to become hardy and, you know, to exist in the cold and, you know, that type of thing, to, you know, to become adapted to a hostile environment, bringing that hostility as part of his genetic experience into places where they're warm. You have an ice-aged mentality that invaded a tropical mentality and therefore had no empathetic connection, nothing. And because he saw that the black male penis, as Dr. Francis Crest said, could destroy him, everything representative of his fear was shown in the way that he addressed the peoples of color, especially males. He even created his weaponry to look like the male the black male phallic symbol. Instead of it giving life, it gave death instead. So everything is psychology. This is why it's so important. He's done so much in the past to study the black man's psychology, to see why he is an ape, why he is, you know, diminished in his mental capacity. I mean, there's copious amounts of literature from white people, the Aryans, especially these Aryan scholars, about, you know, the diminished mental capacity of black people and their inability to understand abstract thought and all this bullshit, excuse my expression.
Yeah, that's that era but, where Germany, Blumenbeck and them made up that all that 1700s and early. We have found that they have created this white supremacy system in the 1700s. But I want to go in with, when we were interacting with them, through trade, through commerce, and so forth. Would you say that our own people kind of put us in our own little demise by having these treaties with them, having these systems of trading with them, going into the far reaches of Elbion and different parts of Russia, Putin, and, you know, we're finding out all these blacks are, you know, three musketeers, and we write these books, and, you know, Othello. It seemed like we had a good time doing this. What's your view on it? I mean, because I think some responsibility should be coming back on us as well, because we seem to be, if we were first, we had to be smarter, so where did we go dumb?
Well, like I said, we probably had our time. Each civilization has its start, its rise, and its fall. Ours came, and theirs came. They're at a peak, but now they want to destroy themselves.
It's like a phase of the Roman Empire, Egypt go down, and so forth. And I do understand that concept of kingdoms going down. I'm just to the point where, you know, you see so much happening, and then you see that our people, considering that, and I give thanks to Steve Copley for coming out with that concept about the boule. I always say a revolution, and you remember saying one day, I think you said your wife was part of Nat Turner?
Indeed.
Yeah. I thought about, because I look at all this also, I noticed that every rebellion that we could have won, our people told. What brings that we will go into such a betrayal to the fact that we would tell on each other, and this concept now, the reason why they brothers, I think they did the same thing that most people say we did to them with the Yaku theory, that they bred us now. It's their turn, they bred us, and now they got a special Negro called the Boule that's still entrenched. What's your take on that?
Well, I'm not sure where you're going with it. You're going from breeding to Boule. I'm not sure where you want
to take it. I'm saying because it's like they created a black protector of their philosophy. That's where I'm going.
Well, the Talented Tenth was actually created in order to circumvent any kind of cohesion, black cohesion, on the territories that they had conquered. They needed the skilled labor. They needed the black bodies. They could not have what had developed in America go back to Africa where they were doing their mischief. And so they made sure that all alignments and the connections to the Marcus Garvey movement, that its power began to wane when they began to destroy the economic basis on it and to imprison and tax and do all the things that they did by bringing in agents from Great Britain, because they couldn't do anything with him. Here you had a man that had over 9 to 10 million members of his UNIA. He had ships. He built schools. He built hotels. He had homes. He had trade with at least 4 or 5 African countries and a couple of European countries, France and a couple of others that were ready to do business with him. That was a threat, a huge threat. And those who saw in the United States what that would do when the Africans here who had developed the skilled labor as well as developed the intellectual know-how to manage skilled labor off in the continent and to export the intellect that was developed, the tricks to learn that they learned of the European man and his trickery to be teaching the people over there. They couldn't afford that. So they had to destroy the UNIA, its power. And what they did was they went to England, because England said, you are not sophisticated enough, you are not mature enough to deal with an intellect such as Marcus Garvey.
And they used the what, the NAACP, the Urban League, and all those?
No, they used the IRA.
The IRA?
They used his taxes. They used his taxes, and they undermined his business. They accused him of mismanagement. They accused him of misappropriation of funds. They just trumped up everything they could on him in order to undermine his credibility.
Tony Martin did a good book on that, and again, they always had, and they brought in black, and because I'm still thinking that in every group, and I'm more fearful, and it's my opinion, because I could see what a white man looks like, but a black man looks like me, and a black woman, it's hard to tell who's who when you are in these organizations, and I've been in one that happened itself. It imploded from those within, and I think those like the New Albions, and they always get our people to testify, which helps in the cause. But let me ask you another question before we, and if it's okay with you, I'd like to bring some calls. Those of you, if you don't mind taking any questions, is that all right with you?
No, I'll take a few.
I will give a few questions, and I'm asking, be brief, ask your question, and that'll be it. He will do the answering on that. But let me ask you about President Obama. I know you did a lot of, and I don't know if you, what's your take on it, some was good and some was bad, when you said that he was actually cloned. Have you stepped back from that, or are you still state that you believe that is such?
Cloned? No, I don't remember me saying that he was cloned.
You said he was from Malcolm X and so forth, type of thing.
Well, that's not being cloned. That's essentially having another father or another parentage.
Right.
He had another parenting. Again, like I said, and I've said that throughout the series that I did, I brought the principle around that story. The reason I did bring that story was because it seemed that it had to do with a kind of a hundredth monkey situation. And I'm telling the family this, and they can say anything they want to say. I said it because my wife, in passing, said when he was making his inaugural speech in 2008 that he looked like and talked like and had a demeanor like Malcolm X. And that gave me an idea. I said, well, perhaps maybe there may be something to that. So I did my scanning and my research, as I've always done, and came up with the fact that there's more than one people were thinking along those lines. So I actually was putting information out there that was already out there and using the premise upon which that was based gave my audience something to think about. So a lot of people thought I betrayed the name and the image of Malcolm X because how could he dare lay with a white woman after being in the mountain. But I keep telling them that when he was Detroit Red, that's all he did.
Well,
so it's not far-fetched. It wasn't far-fetched for him to be with a white woman. So all that old nonsense about what it is, it really had nothing to do. So what I did was actually put out there what was the information. A lot of people didn't have this information. They didn't know it even existed. And then the second time I did it, I brought even more of the proof of these people coming out. And now, even coming, I was back in 2005, 2006, and 2007, I was speaking about him being homosexual and that he was a bisexual, and him and Rahm Emanuel used to, you know, frequent the Chicago bathhouses together. And when I said that, I said, well, let me back off of that because they may not want to hear that the brother looking all slick is a little bit, a little bit.
Yeah, we know about that. Larry Sinclair. We know all about that Chicago thing up there.
Right. All of that started coming out. Right. So when I started to speak on things that most people don't know about, that I have a connection to, I brought that information out so that people can actually see what is being said about that situation. So, I really have no apologies to make to anybody, and I really don't give a damn what anybody thinks. I am not any less grateful and honoring of Malcolm X and Malcolm, who he is, Omawale. I don't have any less respect for him because of that. But I'll tell you this, based on his upbringing and what it is that he did, where Obama was living in a proximity two blocks away from Malcolm X while he was living in Queens. All of this is on that particular investigation. There's no coincidences, and the very fact that it isn't the story of him with Malcolm that is so important. It's the story with who his alleged uncle is and what they did to undermine and take over the government of the United States of America. That was the real story. And most people just went right over the top of their heads. So, again, like I said, I put stories and information out there based upon my research. I research it very thoroughly.
Oh, go ahead. Now, I was going to say, you see what Joan Rivers pretty much backed it up. She was just interviewed 3 days ago, and you see what she said, and she had no apologies. She was like, everybody knows it. But, oh, wow. So it is interesting what is being said.
Yeah, well, like I said, I don't just put anything out there willy-nilly. Anytime I do find that I have made any kind of mistake on anything, I will come out and tell everyone, listen, this was not the fact. This is what it is. I adjust my information. So that's why I haven't heard anything back from anybody in my comparison of Shiva to Islam. Nobody, no one, and especially when I broke down how Noble Drew Ali was actually breaking down, the Dravidian context. He was dressed in a Dravidian, and his major secretary was dressed as Pavarotti. So I don't hear anything back except a lot of complaints around Malcolm.
You won't hear anything back because I noticed that something about us, we shut down at anything that has effect on our belief system, and good or bad. I mean, it was shut down, and the hand gestures that Noble Drew was doing is also the same thing for Shiva and Brahma. So it's there. I researched it. I've seen it myself. What I usually do, Brother Valentine, I usually go and look up, make sure the person's saying what they're saying has validity. And because people do not do the research and they do not want to go and see if you're telling the truth or if I'm telling the truth, they get upset and they kind of like, I don't want to deal with you. But that's not how true intellectual faculties is done today or in any world, because you must have open debate and you must be willing to take it and look it up. What's the purpose of saying that scripture to everybody? Study to show thyself approved, all right? A man that's not ashamed. Then that means you got to do some studying on it, and that seems to be a serious problem in the black community on a lot of bases. Let me get a few calls, and I ask you again, please, be brief, and I'll get your question now. I got 7820 OE Dry Bones. Please make a brief comment, and you got a question for our brother. 7820. Let me go to 5959.
Hello, Brother Drabon, how you doing?
Go ahead, brother.
How you doing? Hello.
I'm fine, man. Go ahead. Ask your question. Yeah, we hear you good. Go ahead.
Okay. Hello, Dr. Phil Valentine. How you doing, brother?
I'm good, brother. How are you?
Doing excellent. This is Brother Montu Hotep from Lakeland, Florida. I had you down a while back, you and your wife. I don't know if you remember me. I had you down. It was in Lakeland, Florida. Just got a quick question. I remember you doing the research about the hollow earth, and
yes.
I can't think of the guy who flew the plane and took it over there, but I've been doing some research on the whole thing about the inner earth, and I remember reading about Madame Blavatsky, about the coming race, and I think it's the guy that wrote that book, and dealing with the Viril power. And,
the Viril power.
Yes, I'm just trying to get a little bit more information. So if you can enlighten me on some of that more information, I appreciate it. You know, enlighten some of the people. I know they love to hear a little bit on that, if you can.
Yes, Viril was the Germans were using Tesla's energy and supposedly extraterrestrial information about using certain forces of the planet that we had, that our ancestors used to use, but were only now being rediscovered by European technologists at that time. The real force was said to have been used on the flying discs that the Germans had developed. And it's also have been used as a mind force, which gave birth, or actually what the CIA later picked up and developed as their program for mind control, or what they call remote viewing. You can get information on the Vril Force, if I'm not mistaken, if they're still around. There is a rare book, I think it's online. I'm not sure if it's .org or .org, try all three of them, but it's Health Research. And also Llewellyn, L-L-E-W-Y-L-Y-N, Llewellyn Books, rare books. And once you get into them, it's healthresearch.com, healthresearch.org, or healthresearch.net. I'm not sure which one it is. And it's Llewellyn Books, the two separate ones, the two with rare books. But I believe when I had my library, when I got my book on the Vril Force and somnambulism and cramp from Health Research. So check with Health Research, and if you can get into them, the line, put in the search box VRIL Force. Hopefully I've answered that question.
Well, you know, I'm going to add to that, because it is seven chakra system of energy that is permeating out of the earth in different locations. And what's your take on this alien ideology that they say that, you know, the aliens gave them that, or are we the really real knowledge came out of Kemen or out of this? Because even they have certain things on the walls that are pretty bizarre. What's your take on the technology that the ancients had as compared to today?
The ancients were more mind-based entities rather than overt technologies. I always say to my students that if there are entities living in parts of the universe that need a ship to travel, then know that their basic psychology is one of brutality and warmongering, and very non-empathetic. Because if you look at what the European developed into and where he came from to develop into it with his technology, you'll see that he's nothing more than a warmongering son of a bitch. And he learns more from dealing with and using his technologies towards warfare and the development of warfare and control than anything else. So as far as so-called extraterrestrial life, they're real. Anybody who says they're not, they're stupid. They may not be living within, around us, but you can definitely see them as extra-dimensional entities. There are portals that our ancestors in the so-called hieroglyphics showed that there are ways for you to shift at a 90-degree angle and leave this particular what we call density, to go into and occupy other densities, just that have just as much sure footing as the one that we're in today. So we do have the capabilities to mentally shift the way the so-called Aztecs and Mayans did to leave out of here when the conquistadors arrived. And there are those entities that are living, as the brother was speaking about, and under layers, the Earth's mantle is about 800 or 900 miles thick. About 200 miles down into the Earth, there are right now fast-moving trains that run on a power that does not need electricity. It runs on
No, it's not a
Yeah, that electromagnetic current, more than electromagnetic, it's actually, well, it'll come to me. But it runs at about 300 or 400 miles an hour. They cross continents under the ocean. And there are freshwater lakes and seas, lakes and ponds under the earth at this time as well.
I find that to be, because we've seen that there was, in a book I was reading, and then you had Dr. David Himmeltep, he was on there stating that there's many caverns and big cities under the earth. And I don't see why anybody would think that's not far-fetched to believe, because, you know, this earth has, we're peons in time. But when I look at some of the artifacts of some of the ancient, I see that same star, and I notice the Dogons have such a philosophy about the star, and many people say it's the Pleiades or the dog star. They say that's the portal where the ancestors came out of. What's your take on that as well?
We look at the Sirius star system. It's not in our density. When we look at the Sirius star system, we're looking at another dimension or a reflection of that dimension. So our ancestors essentially danced in and out of vortices, time warps, and what they call stargates. And one of them is the sun, the one we have as our Ra, which is the gate itself. They stopped making those cameras that took pictures of the sun that showed it as a hole in the sky, because essentially the sun actually doesn't exist there. It's a reflection being broadcast from somewhere else, just like we are. We're nothing more than broadcasting images of intention into this plane, into this density. And the image now has gathered to itself this flesh, this energy, that gives us the sense of some kind of tangibility or reality that doesn't really exist. And when we die, quote unquote, we remove our image, or we pull back our intention to the point that we have projected it from.
In my opinion, by what's being seen, these ancient symbols are pretty much everywhere. I mean, the Christmas tree, that would be the star Sirius. I mean, we got Sirius radio. It's funny how they throw that culture back into our face, and we don't embrace the essence of it by seeing it, that it comes from such a high order. Let me ask you a few other questions while we got you. Oh, let me get one more. Let me get a few more. That's it. Let me get out of Fort Lauderdale, 9240. Oh, you drive on. Comment, question.
What's up, 9240.
Go ahead.
Can you hear me?
I'm fine. I hear you. Go
very
ahead.
Good.
Greetings,
family, and greetings, Brother Phil Valentine. How you doing, brother? Thank you for being out and giving us such information. Also, the condolences for your passing of your other half. I didn't know that she had passed away.
Who was this?
Hello?
No, nobody passed away. I'm not sure what you're
here. I think you said when you're, I don't know if it's the first wife. You said she was passing or something when she told you about Obama. I think he's talking about that.
No. She said in passing when she was walking by the TV screen.
Misunderstanding. Yes, but thank you, brother, for coming out. And I've attended many of your metaphysics seminars and a lot of stuff that you did. The question I want to ask you is, with everything that is happening and everything that is going on, as a family, as a whole, we talk here on the show with Brother Driver, which is doing a big service to the community as far as informing them what's going on. But the next step after that, what we want to know is, as a family, where do we go? Because this is very, very serious, and this is past years, actually. It's detrimental to our well-being and to our existence and where we go from, especially if we have offsprings. And to educate them, where do we go from here now? Where do we start? And one of the things that we talk about is having a tank where we get together and start planning and moving towards certain things as far as going out on food, agriculture, and so on and so forth. Because a lot of us, especially here in the U.S., in this corporation, are so far away from things like that, growing your own food and different things. These are some things that we need to be thinking about. So which direction do you think we need to be going to from this on?
All right, thank you, bro. I'm going to go ahead. Thank you, man. I appreciate that.
Well, again, as you said, first we have to, as adults, are we ready to make the necessary sacrifice? And are we ready to come together to do a collective effort, to make a collective effort? Everybody has been cast into their own individual conditions that they're struggling against one another rather than pooling their resources. And they think that they would kind of lose themselves. And the fear that they've put into us is that we lose ourselves when we come together with others, and that there's a competition. And we've been bred to think of competition with one another rather than to be in compatibility with one another. So we have to raise the next generation to work together and to give them the kind of intelligence necessary to act cohesively on specific things that we need immediately, and that is schooling for our children that is not connected to the public, the public drone-making machinery that diminishes the intellectual capability of our children and teaches them how to think rather than how to think. And so we have to start with the next generation. Sometimes there are those in these other generations that we cannot help because they're already so far gone and caught up in the system. And I know this sounds cruel, but if we are to plan, we have to think the way they do, as a warrior would and as a general would in a wartime situation. The situation is now where, the battlefield has become, and I'm using these as metaphors, the battlefield has become so confusing. The enemy now has blown so much smoke into the environment that we can't even discern each other to know where we're aiming our attentions. We don't know which direction to go, and we don't even know who's beside us and who beside us is real, who beside us is going to be there with us. So today, I think that the only way that we're going to really work is when the few who have the capability to come together will be able to take a few of our children, those who are able to be molded, and then use them as a prototype to teach others how to get it done. We don't have a self-interest group, a self-interest plan. We're always worried about whether or not the man himself will give us permission or will validate what we say and what we do, or is looking for some kind of validation from others. And that's what we got to stop. So I believe that everything is going to start first and foremost with educating our children. We have all the information. We have all the teachers in place. We have all of the scholarship necessary to raise the next generation right. We don't have the will to come together to do it, though. We're too busy wanting to step out. And the one thing I don't like about this particular generation is that everybody wants to be a teacher now. Nobody goes through the crucible that Dr. Ben and Dr. Clark and we sitting at the feet handing the torches. Everybody now, because of YouTube, can now get in, snatch the information from off the YouTube or off of the, and then cut and paste their own format and then go out and say, okay, fill me. I'm the new master. I'm the this and the that. And everybody wants to be seen. Like that old saying, everybody wants to be an Indian chief. Nobody wants to be an Indian. And everybody is trying to vie for attentions for people so that they can get accolades and 15 minutes of fame. What this has done, the conscious community, and I'm responsible for that, and I hold myself responsible, and the other progenitors and creators of the conscious community, and we were the creators of the conscious community because we took it away from, we took it to the next phase from our elders, Dr. Ben and Dr. Clark, who gave us an understanding and a consciousness based upon what we did, the effects of African genius. But we never knew the cause of African genius. We never got into the spirituality, the metaphysics. And that's where this so-called conscious community came in, when we started to raise the comedic sciences, raise the astrosophic sciences. What it is that our elders didn't teach us, we went to learn and began between Bobby, myself, Delbert Blair, C. Freeman L., and other brothers and sisters, so like Brother Taj, we went and started getting into all of the metaphysics. We got to get into the astrosophic, the astrology and the numerology and all of the things that the brilliant minds of our ancient ancestors actually created, and what the white man began stealing and creating his new age with. So we wanted to build that up in the black community and in our own community, in the grassroots community. But then it just went hog ass wild. It started to, everybody saying, "Okay, I can do this. I can get this. I can do this." But nobody ain't getting anything done. Nobody's taking that information and consolidating it into a plan so that we can move forward. But guess what? I know that there are a few brothers out there who will say, "Well, I'm doing it." Yes, you are. There's sisters out there saying, "Well, I'm doing it." Yes, you are. But again, there has to be a consolidated effort. Your efforts towards the small micromanagement of your community, that's where you start. And then you find out what works. And then when you find what works, you start networking with others who have found what works in their community, and then you connect the dots. That's how it's done.
And I'm going to let somebody else get one last question before we go on to the top of the hour. It's almost 11. I think that we've been, and I'm in my 50s, I've been pretty much in the same era. And when A.J. Rogers was the first book we were told to read, Sex and Civilization. I mean, we did the research, but we started to find out there was a, now, there was a time when these caustic leaders, and when I say caustic leaders, those like of, say, Elijah Muhammad, Farrakhan, the Yahweh Ben Yahweh, the Malachi York, these individuals did have schools. They did have businesses. They did have these things. Somewhere down the line, between growth and notoriety that these groups came, it seems that they all went down the way. Farrakhan is probably one of the last, and he probably will be the last of those type of groups, in my opinion. That's my opinion. What they happened to those, because we had school. I don't think that's nothing new about us having schools, us having land, but we seem to lose it. And that's where I'm having a problem with, getting with people that, you know, that we can keep. Because I admit, like that time, I don't think nobody gave as much as we did. We gave whole paychecks, dumb as that sound. Anybody who knows the Temple of Yahweh here in Florida, that was a very big movement. And it went into a serious issue. I mean, we had every hotels, you name it. The only thing he didn't have is ships, but it was, Gil probably would have got that if he didn't put the hotel on Miami Beach. Why is it that we get such an attack, and then the people just watch us, and I say that not in everybody, but the people seem to watch the groups disintegrate, and we just fall by the wayside. What do you see and why that happens? Because it happens to a lot of our groups, especially the ones that are doing certain things.
Well, I'm going to say this, and I'm going to try to wrap it up at this point myself. The reason for that is because we are dealing with the Messiah complex. These groups that you're talking about each have a leader that they quote-unquote even worship. And once you have a head that can be chopped off with people who essentially look to that head as their only leader. And once you have leaders and intellects who essentially teach in tears and only raise a few to be greater than they. That's where your problem lies. It is to diffuse the greatness that you have achieved through the people, so that when one head gets cut off, there's no movement. The movement does not die. It continues to go on. That's been the problem. We've been continually, the ones who really lead the planet, you don't see them. The ones who really orchestrate from behind the scenes, you don't see them. And it's been our problem. We have a Messiah, essentially a Messiah complex. And when the United States machinery, what I call the propagandist machinery, run by the Khazarian, when they used that machinery called TV and used it as a propagandist weapon against the psyche, they began to build up, you know, our need to look for somebody as a strong leader. And COINTELPRO not only destroys those leaders, but creates them for us.
That's right.
So when we begin to, you know, do the things necessary to raise each one of our children to that same great height that you achieved, and that's what I teach in my school, the University of Commission Sciences, that if you as a teacher, because that's all we're teaching, we're not teaching students, we're teaching teachers. Just the very fact that you are a teacher means you are to remain a student in accordance to our philosophy. That's our philosophy, and our wording is the mission is mastery. And again, the mission is an ongoing thing. So if you are not teaching, and if you find yourself to become a teacher, if you're not teaching your student to be greater than you, then essentially you're just pimping the energy that comes with the attention that that student gives to you. And attention is a very powerful energy. It's a very powerful material. It's a material substance to the psyche. You can feed on people's attention. And that gives you that attention that people give you. They pay it. That's why they say they ask you to pay attention. You pay a lot. You pay in energy. You pay in everything, your psyche, everything, your thoughts, all of that goes. So if you're not teaching your student to become greater than you, if you have been given the gift to be able to teach, and if you're not teaching your student to be greater than you, then you're a pimp. Then you're somebody up there who's up there aggrandizing the position you've been given, and you're just serving this image that you project of yourself. So our mistake is that we keep looking for messiahs, not teachers. We're not looking for teachers, we're looking for messiahs. So we got to come out of that messiah.
100%. That is 100% accurate as a person who knows and been there. You're absolutely right. I'm only going to ask one more call. Make it brief because you've been waiting a long time. I see you jumping on the net. One last call. This is the last call tonight. I'm going to ask 1-877. Make your comment brief and ask a question, please. Thank you. 1-877.
Okay, thank you so much, Dry Bones, and thank you so much, Brother Valentine, for coming on. I've learned so much. I got to know you through coming on the show, so thank you so much. I have two questions for you. First question is, have you ever read the book of Enoch? And my second question is, based on the I don't know if it's the last series of Hidden Colors, I've seen one and two. I haven't seen three. What can I take from three that I didn't get from one and two?
Well, to answer to your first question, I read both books on Enoch, the one from the Pseudepigraphica, which is the ones that were rejected by the Vatican, the Book of Enoch. And I read the Yahweh, the Book of Enoch, by J.J. Hertog. In fact, I got a chance to meet him. Found out that he was funded by Rockefeller to write that book. And in it, he did some very, very heavy research into the Book of Enoch from the Pseudepigraphica, and he came up with a lot of information. It took me about a year to decipher the book when it first came out, And after rereading it again, it was became very easy for me to decipher it. And I incorporated a lot of what he found and he got from his research into my research. And as far as the second question, I guess it's a growth process. Hidden Colors is a growth process. It's a child that was born out of an idea. I was one of the first. I'm very privileged to have been one of the first that was actually asked by Brother Tariq to participate. And it was an idea that grew based upon the fact that it touched upon something that was so necessary for our people. That is a reintroduction of what it is that we used to read in books, since this is a kind of video, audio-visual generations. It kind of capsulized and gave interest to young people today to start reading again. There's so much that has been given, and I don't want people to really think that the Hidden Colors is all you're going to need, because I know I've heard from professors who use the book, these three, or use at least one and two in their sociology classes and in their Black history classes as required viewing, which I think is very honorable and beautiful. But I don't want the audiovisual generation to diminish the value of having a tangible book in your hand. I'm not talking about one of those pads where you put the book on a screen, because they could yank that and completely just hit you with an EM burst, and that doesn't work again, and what you're going to do? You can't find your book. That's a way of destroying your connection to books. I say to the young people that what is different about the third one is that we are examining, again, the psychology of those who, in the first two, we were bringing knowledge about what they did and what we were doing in response to that. The third one essentially will open up the psyche of the European and for us to investigate how we have been reacting to him rather than him sending his white philosophers and psychiatrists to try to give us their jargon on what we are about, you know, talking about reverse racism and all the rest of the nonsense that white intellectuals like to put out as their jargon for explaining our reaction to them.
Well, I believe that's something that we all should be able to check out. I think it's on documentary, should be on sale and for order. So y'all go and get it. Let me ask you, because I know your time is short, what should we be looking for from you, Dr. Valentine? What do you have in store for us in the next coming year or next few months?
Yeah, I'm going to have to take a hiatus in order for me to be able to finish my books. I have six other books outstanding other than The Wounded Womb that I finished. The Wounded Womb is actually book four of a seven-book series that I had started. And I started all seven books, but got to finish book four because of the necessity and the real need. And from the insistence of sisters who really asked me to finish what it is that I had started back in the early 1990s. It took so long to make The Wounded Womb, nearly 15 years. The reason why is because every time I would look or every time I would keep my research going, I would find more and more verification of what I was saying based upon my own knowledge of the human anatomy and what this ease really was from a hygienic perspective, going back over the science and finding more and more justification and verification of what it is I was saying about what was happening to our sisters through feminism and through the adoption of masculine behavior. It all began to show itself, so I had to go back and revise it until it became it was 1,000 pages. I had to cut it down now. It's a little under 709 pages.
You had a real book there. Before we let you go, what was the name of that high order that you were talking about? People are texting me about the name of the high Masonic order, you said it was higher than the Blue Lodge.
Yeah, they may not find too much information on that. It's called the Incunabula, I-N-C-U-N-U-B-U-L-A. So, yeah, but like I said, you know, as far as all these things are concerned, I mean, you know, just to wrap up that if we really want to do something with ourselves, they say act locally so that you by acting locally, you're actually acting globally. Well, I say to the brothers and sisters that the future is the children that you're raising, and to put them in front of TVs, to stick them in front of video games, to let them stay up 8 hours of the night, to not give them a discipline, that they can understand the discipline of being a child so that they can appreciate what needs to be done as a child to gain and earn adulthood. We don't do that anymore for our children. We don't put them through the rigors of being young adults so that they can go through the crucible and earn manhood and womanhood. We don't do that anymore. And I suggest that there are teachers who are retired in your community. Find them, and just with your pennies, they may be on their pension, you can get together, each one of you all. The more that come together, the less you have to pay each of you all. $25 or $50 from each of you a week. If you have 25 people giving $25 a week or $50 a week to teach your child what you want to teach, I think that is a nice little stipend that you could give to those who you want to teach your future, to your future. So there are ways for us to get around. We've been a self-sufficient people for the longest period of time. We don't need anybody's help. They know that, but we have to come to know that.
That's right. We have
to. And if anybody would like to get in contact with us, they can get in contact with us at 800-847-1291. Again, 800-847-1291. If you'd like vaccination exemption packages, or you'd like to join us in our university, or if you'd like to have a health consultation. Again, 800-847-1291.
And that's down here in the great Sunshine State. We thank you again, brother. I appreciate the time you took out of your busy schedule to come on ours to give some enlightenment and some encouragement to the people that, you know, this battle is and can still be won. And all we got to do is participate with all our energy that has been given to us by divine ancestors. Again, y'all get online, look the Bad Brothers books up, get some of his books, the videos. He's all over YouTube. Support our scholars, our griots, as Brother Ashwell Crazy would call them. The griots are there. You are griots out there who are listening. Raise up some of these young brothers and sisters, because they need some guidance. And I hope our community will wake up to show that we are the true torchlight. So, brother, I'm going to let you go. I appreciate it. I'm going to stay on the line for those of you who want to stay on to discuss what we just heard and get more, you know, more information out of each other. And I know we got, I'm seeing all over the state. So, Brother Valentine, again, you have a lovely evening. Hotep.
Thank you, Brother Hotep.
Hotep. Bill Valentine, everybody. We appreciate that. That's the second time on the around with us. And we just gonna keep going. We're gonna get more and more. And we asking you to participate in homeschooling if you can. Now, I'm gonna be honest with you. I didn't have no teachers. But we did go to took them to the slave ship Amistad that was in Key West as young as they seen the slave ship and was on it. You take your kids to that. You take them to the King Tut exhibit. You show them the glory, and then you explain to them the proper history. And, of course, math is universal, English, and at least now they need to learn a second language, everybody. Anybody in the state of Florida in the lower level, it's going to be mandatory for your next generation to learn Spanish. It's impossible. I don't care where you're at, Texas, you can be in California. If this next generation does not learn the second language, they will be economically kicked out of commerce because everything is going into that language. And if you don't believe it, just keep looking. Just keep looking around. And it's not to be throwing any arrows at them, but remember, Spain and Queen Isabella. And I don't know if this was in the movie, but Queen Isabella was with our Moorish brothers. And, you know, these things need to be talked about even more deeply, because we have to have a more in-depth look at history, because there is some spots where it's at. I'm going to stop bringing y'all to the line. If you want to stay on, let me get Sister 8848. What's your view on what you just heard? What's your comment? 8848.
I wanted to ask him a question. Actually, Phil Valentine's is Phil Valentine's. He's, you know, I mean, a lot of the things that he says is excellent, but I wanted to ask him in reference to seeing if he knows anything about, I have a friend of mine who's married to an African woman, and he just told me tonight that he says to me, before Obama gets out of office, he's going to make sure that he, you know, writes a bill of duality, citizenship for the Africans. And that is when the American economy is going to go crumbling down. Because
that he's going to sign a bill for us. What do you mean, what, Africans on the continent or Africans that are on this continent? On the motherland.
No,
what are you talking about?
The African country is going to have dual citizenship. And that means that the economy in America will crumble, because then that means that, you know, because right now they don't have dual citizenship. The Africans in Africa, they don't have dual citizenship.
Oh, in Africa. Okay, why would you
exactly.
Have to bring him on. I got to get clarity on that, because he's saying they don't have – I don't know what he means by they don't have dual citizenship. I can see him saying us over here. I might want dual citizenship with Ghana or with Liberia, but I mean, I don't know if he means that the Africans in Liberia have dual citizenship here. Well, that's something to think about, but we got to get more clarity on that. Let me get 777 on in here.
Hey, what's happening, Brother John Bones? I was hoping to get in. I was like to fill a question, but I guess I.
I'm gonna tell y'all, if you do ask a question, he has a blog that I gave out, and I'll be glad to give it to everybody, where you can just shoot the question, and I'm sure he will respond to it. That's one of the ways of getting to know some of you people as well. That's what I do. I go on there and just start calling. So go ahead. Going to ask him? Maybe he'll shoot it back to me on email.
Yeah, but I'll just make a statement in reference to I think there's we got to connect the dots and drawing a line in history as to how things evolved to this point, not from the basic history that's given to us through the European education, but we need to know, as far as going back to Kemet, these racial groups that came in to dominate the region, the knowledge how it was taken and subjugated and regurgitated to us, especially dealing with the Hyksos. I think that there's a long line of history there that we need to know how they evolved from that particular racial type into what you would call your Vikings today, which would be now your Europe, Western Europe, your Germanic influences.
Yeah.
But I think we really have to know who's friend or foe and dealing with these, with those racial types, and we have not properly connected dots. Like, for example, current event with the situation with the Sterling, you know, and he quoted and made some statement as to how they saw the world, especially blacks, Africans, but a lot of people not realize this is something that they have held from their historical origins and their perceptions of Africans and knowing their history. You know, they knew. I'm sure they know that for 400 years they spent in Egypt at the time from where they evolved from. So those type of history, connect the dots, really would help us to kind of differentiate who's friend or foe as we're moving forward, because especially in the African-American community or African community period, you have exploitive races that have come in and they've had their agendas implemented and they've been very successful. But us, where we fall short is not being able to clearly mount up a good resistance, but also identifying who's friend or foe. And history, understanding history, connecting the dots really would help put, I guess, future generations in a better position to do that, so they can really create a breather space so they can grow and develop. I wanted to really ask Phil about that.
Hold on, let me get this so you can keep going. But y'all, I got pretty much everybody going to bring up for a minute. Maybe we need to start looking at, okay, if these things took place, we're thinking fast. A lot of times we take history and we think it happened bam, 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 just like that. It took years, maybe 15, 20, 25 years before, or even 50 years, in some cases 100 years before they were able to implement the whole plan of in that period. But it seems to be a problem with connecting this so-called connection that we have and the interaction that we have with them, and we have to realize what and how our groups are different. Everybody that's black is not the same. I mean, from India, people from India is dark, just as dark as black American Africans, but they are not in the same cultural thinking. And I must say, everybody, I want y'all to listen, and y'all look this up. Every group does not get the same treatment over there. Many groups get more money. They get tax exemptions. So we got to look at the whole script here. Why and what laws was passed? And what was our people as politicians, if you believe in the politician game, what were they doing when they watched this happen? And then why are we watching them watch that happen? And see, our reaction is always, like the brother said, we emotional. So we don't even react to danger until it's almost at our throats. So this is why we have a need for thinking tanks. We have a need for new curriculums to be developed. And not, like he said, I like what he said about old teachers. But we got to find teachers that are willing to teach like this. You know, it's hard to find teachers that are this, let's just say, motivated in knowledge. You know, many of our people, and I'm going to read a couple quotes next week about these things. And I'm going to read a Pope. I'm going to read something, and y'all give me a comment on this one. This is by Pope Leo the X. Look what this man said. I got all these quotes from people to see why we are still believing this. It says, it served us well, this myth of Christ. This is what Pope Leo the X said. So we are being, really our biggest problem, in my estimation, is our spiritual attack. Because that spiritual attack has turned us against each other. And when you got people like Napoleon Bonaparte, look what he just said. This is a quote from him. There must be religion. Otherwise, the poor will murder the rich. You understand what he just said? This is Napoleon Bonaparte who created Egyptology. That's where the study of Egyptology comes from, Napoleon. So he says that there must be a religion because the poor will kill the rich. Now, think about that. And this is what they've done. And that's why he said we have a messiahship complex. We have to have a messiahship. We don't want to be a leader on our own or as a collective, meaning all of us are leaders. We got to have one person, and once that one person is gone, believe me, I ask anybody. Y'all can ask New Orleans. You can ask anybody. Is the mobile Jew, Ali, science, Garvey movement, they die for some reason because the quality of our leadership did not trickle to the youth, and the youth does not get any leadership, and it happened to every one of our generations. Y'all know that. Our parents did not know what we know today. They did good. We can't blame them, but they did not know this type of information. It was there. Don't tell me it wasn't there, but I can go back to each generation and show that it was there. It was there. Just like we try to say James Trafficking was on here a week ago. This man gave a speech about everything we talk about. IRS, commercial trade, UCC. This man did a speech in the Congress. And you have to say, well, this is 93. We went through the Million Man March, three of them. We ain't heard nobody, or the Black Caucus, we ain't heard nobody in that parameter say, this got to be worked on right here. No, they let that man go to jail and come out now. He's kicking it to his people, but he's doing it in the way he needs to do it. I ain't mad at him. Let me get in here before it get too late. But I just want to thank everybody. But Monday night, we're going to do a show if y'all will come on. And we're going to try to connect the dots. Because I'm sick of people giving us the clues, the answers, and we just go over our head. And that's called select brainwash. Selective brainwash. It means that you only want to hear what you want. And so your brainwash is only based off what makes you feel good. If it's anything that's detrimental to you thinking, you don't want to hear it. And that's what's been going on. Anything that's detrimental, the brother said earlier, and I like what he said. He said, none of the people who would not come to prove him wrong. And that's what happens. Many of our friends, families, rather than sit down and say, you know, where'd you get that from? What book did you get it from? They want you to go to school, though. This is what they tell us. That's a see how the hypocrite in our teaching. They want you to go to school. They want you to learn. But as soon as you learn something that they're not familiar with, now you shun. That has to stop everybody. Especially when you got facts.
Yeah.
Documented facts. Documented facts, y'all. And the people still want to look at you as if you are beneath them. Because why? A black man and woman can't go and study and research outside of the curriculum given to us by Europeans. That's where the problem comes in. Because our curriculum is like a circulatory system. It goes right through everybody and is connected. So we are very much in trouble if we don't rethink and reprogram. And everybody's kids are in school right now. I know it. It's hard. It really is. I'm just going to give some clues to my daughters who came back from Japan with pictures of the Black Buddha, which is only seen three times a year. And let me just tell you, they said that the Japanese people wanted to touch their hair because it said it was good luck because it was so curly and so black in their eyes. So this goes to show you that the rest of the world has another view of us people that maybe we need to be embracing some of them. Because remember, we've been taught that everybody just liked us, and maybe that's the plan too, to make everybody look like they dislike us. But in reality, some of these countries embrace us. It's just that right now, the economics is going to be a major factor. Now, I don't know how it's going to collapse, and I'm going to shut the air off in a minute so we can have a good show on this on Monday. But let's just all know that they can't fake a collapse as well, meaning they can make it look like we are broke. But how are you really broke if you're still, you know, you can print as much money as you really want? The key word is for us not to panic. The key to 1929, the key word was the Great Panic. That means people was jumping off roofs and they were jumping off the banks. The people was killing themselves because they thought they lost everything when it was an illusion. How could you lose anything if it really ain't there? So let's not panic. I guarantee you. Panic is the worst thing we can do if something happens, because we'll go into chaos. Chaos leads to anarchy, and then they will come in with order, which means martial law. That's what they want. The key word is not to panic and not to let yourself get caught up with, oh, now I can't say anything about a natural disaster coming because that's a different type of game, but an economic thing means you still should be able to maintain yourself, how to be in order, but we cannot panic, y'all. Please understand that. I cannot stress that any further. So what I'm seeing with these countries, Detroit, all these others, they want us to start panicking. Panic leads to people going into, and that's why the police and them are in riot gear all day long doing these trainings. And they are using our fear as a way to control it. So I'm going to say this. Prepare your mind. So you won't be part of what is called the deceive, the sheep, because sheep are gullible people. And I told somebody this today, it's funny that Jesus wanted to be around gullible people. That just don't make it sound right to me, but y'all understand. I hope y'all will come on a Monday night. I thank all you for coming in and calling in. I thank our guests. And believe me, it ain't about me. It's about you connecting so we can connect the dry bones. Good night, everybody. Look forward to y'all on Monday so we can have a Free Your Mind Monday.
Okay.
Hey, yes, I'm on with you because me and you still on the same phone.